Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yo, and welcome to the 143rd episode of Lake of Rage, a Pokemon trading card game podcast. I'm your host, as always, Kevin Clementi, aka Mellow underscore Magikarp. I'm joined today by a very special temporary guest host joining us for, I think, like the third or fourth time. We have the one and only Tord Reklev. Tord, how are you doing today?
Hello, hello. I'm doing great. Just enjoying my weekend. So, yeah, everything going well.
It's got to be nice to have a weekend without Pokemon, right?
Yeah, I mean, like, until USC, we'll actually have, like, whole of the remainder of Mars, like, free for, like, big Pokemon events. So that's kind of cool, I guess. And gives me so much more time to practice for USC, which seems like it's needed because a lot of things are happening, for sure.
I assume you're keeping up with the Japanese meta and seeing what's happening over there. And their meta's evolving quite a bit, actually.
No, for sure. I've been keeping up the whole time, and it's been very fun to see the development of it, for sure.
So do you want to leak right now that you're playing a Spather EX, or do you want to keep that under wraps?
I need to keep that under wraps for now, I think, yeah.
Okay, I got you. I'll edit the part out. So we're, of course, here to talk about your deck at the Utrecht special event, where you got top four with what can only be described as 60 standard legal Pokemon cards. So Tord, the question on everyone's mind, including myself, is, was this a real deck, or are you bored because you already have your world's invite and there is no day two and there was no cash, so you said, here it is, I'm gonna do it? So is this a real deck? Are you looking for temporal forces, or do you want to go shiny hunting with some Paldean Fates? Well, be sure to check out tabletopvillage.com and use code MELLOW5 to get 5% off your order for temporal forces, Paldean Fates, or any other product, sleeve, etc. that you are looking for. Not only does it support the podcast and you get some good cards, but you are helping out a family-owned Pokemon first business as well. Again, tabletopvillage.com, code MELLOW and the number 5, M-E-L-L-O-W, and the number 5. Anyway, back to the show.
Almost real deck. So, like, I had this deck more or less done since December, actually. And it was supposed to always be my funny ladder deck, really.
Sure.
It came from the idea of just, you know, how many different cards can we squeeze into a deck and still make it work, right? Like, what it was like, the whole point of it in the first place was to have it a little bit outrageous, right? Like, just throw a bunch of options at the opponent until, like, they couldn't answer anymore. Just, you know, catch them off guard with a random tech here and there. So that was like the base of it. But then I played more and more with it and, like, adjusted it, and it actually became, you know, relatively strong. Like, I still felt like it was, you know, slightly below what I wanted, you know, a real try-hard meta deck for a tournament to be. But I think it actually got really close, which is, you know, very funny when you look at the list, you know, in general. But if we go, like, really deep and analyze the list, then it actually has a lot of things going for it. So
that is one of the things I want to do, is actually look at the details of the list. So we'll get there in a second, but continue on.
So yeah, you know, Utrecht was the last event of this format for me, last big event at least. You know, there is Vancouver, but I'm not going there. So this was my last chance. And I was actually planning on, you know, playing more boring deck, like Gardevoir or Tina, you know, something a little bit more straightforward. And then I suddenly remembered, oh, this is actually my last chance to play this. You know what? Let's do it. Let's have some fun at this one. And definitely succeeded all my expectations. I was like kind of clinging on, right, in the middle of day one, and then suddenly, like, everything was looking up for a while, and we got a really deep run going.
So you mentioned Vancouver is still one of the regionals left. Would you say this is a deck that people can pick up for the Vancouver regionals, and should they? If so.
Not recommend anyone ever picking up this deck and playing into any event whatsoever. It's a very fun deck. Most of its power comes from the surprise factor. Like the simple fact that your opponent does not know your list, right? And that's huge, right? Like you see Pidgey, Charmander, Bidoof. You expect, you know, a relatively normal Charizard deck, right? And then when it comes more and more cards down against you, you realize that this is not a normal Charizard deck. But at that point, it's probably a little bit too late already to properly address, right? There was especially a lot of games where, you know, I play against, you know, comfy type decks, right? I think Manaphy hit the loss on every single time. I was like, obviously, why wouldn't it? But that just gave me, you know, a relatively easy route with Urshifu VMAX for a game in the middle and late game, right? So obviously, if they knew my list, they would keep the Manaphy, and like that would shut down one of my options, right? Or if I'm playing against, you know, Gardevoir and they don't play Turo, they would obviously never bench, you know, Greninja at all, right? But they don't know I have a Mawile, so I mean, I can do that randomly and steal the game too, but in an open deck list, I could never get away with that and like steal games. Which actually happened on stream in Utrecht in round 3, which is like a great example, you know, of just, you know, close deck list knowledge being so important. And now is that it's a little bit out there, you do lose a lot of the power level that was in the deck, which is the surprise factor. But even then, there is still a lot of power level in so many options, of course. Like, it's still very complicated for the opponent to play around you when you have so many different ways you can take the game if you want to. And that power level is still there. But obviously, like, you would want that with more, right? To, like, potentially give it a deep run. On top of that, the deck is just needlessly complicated. I will consider myself relatively good at this game, and I have a real headache playing this deck. So I don't think there's too many people that can pick it up and play it to reasonable success. I wouldn't really recommend, you know, the struggle with it. One of the reasons why I kind of gave up on this deck a few months ago was that if you put in half the amount of effort with any other deck, you will do so well in comparison. So like it's simply just not worth it, right?
So I think that is either news to people's ears who are like, how do I play against this, or disappointing for anyone who picked it up randomly at the last minute. But I do want to talk about the deck building process. So you mentioned that it started as your fun ladder deck, and I want to say it was you. Maybe it was Pedro Torres started it and you took it off when you were streaming, but it was the one of challenge and trying to play a deck that was only one ofs and winning games with it. Is this like kind of an iteration of that for your like fun ladder deck of just, let's see if I can build something to test your own skills of just as many one ofs as possible? Or is this kind of a separate entity from that challenge that you did? It's probably well over a year ago by now.
Yeah, no, I had had this thing going for a while, actually. I think first time I did it was like back in 2011 or 10. Was like when we first got an online client at all. Mm-hmm. That was one of like the first fun challenges I was doing. And I do it from like time to time, again as like a fun challenge, but I allowed myself a little bit more, you know, leniency here. Mm-hmm. Like normally when I do it, I do the one of basic energies as well. And that does quite a lot to handicap you. So did not go in with the one of basic energies here. So it definitely makes the deck pulling process a little bit easier when you don't limit yourself mm-hmm. on that as well, at least. And I also allowed myself to have like four of some of the more key consistency cards, like Ultra Ball, VIP Pass, and Candy. That is also like quite a hindrance to deck building too. Because if you have like a one of Candy, then you're very limited in the amount of evolutions you get access to. Mm-hmm. And if you do like one of Ultra Ball and VIP Pass, like if you only get one of the good ball cards and you have to play a lot of, you know, suboptimal ball cards as well, like then you're adding Pokeball and Great Ball and like all these cards that you don't really want to play. Like they're kind of needless to play, right? So it's kind of like a serious take on an unserious challenge, if that makes sense.
Yeah. How come the two Iono then? Like, I know Iono's a good card, but you could have played one plus a Judge.
I could have. I actually played one Iona, one Roxanne, but the Iona was so much more powerful. I was at triple Iona, no Avery, for a while as well. And that might honestly have been better. Like, Iona is usually, in general, a better card than the Avery in most situations and matchups, actually. But, you know, sometimes Avery is just really good, right? And if you can do it three times, especially, like, could steal some games here and there. So that was just me greeting and, like, having that extra little power level that, you know, don't need it, but it's funny. So it went in there.
So we've seen two iterations of the Tord Reklev deck list. There is the four of everything, right? And so we saw with your original Gardevoir take, and pretty much anywhere on your Limitless page where you look at, you're going to see a bunch of four ofs, with the exception of the most recent one being the Urshifu and Inteleon deck, where you played one of most things. And I remember you saying, what do you mean? This is so consistent. I have Shady Dealings. Is this the same idea of, what do you mean? This is so consistent. I have Quick Search, where, like, that Pidgeot really carries the deck.
I mean, if we could play like a 4-3-1 line of pitcher with Scoop Up Net and stuff, yes, but we can't. So, like, it's different. You also don't have Keep Calling to, like, immediately set up your entire bench.
I mean, you do have Keep Calling.
So, I mean, you call for family. It's for two. Like, 2/3 is definitely a difference maker, but it does help for sure. But you, since Pidgeot can only be used once a turn, you're very disincentivized to play a thick Pidgeot line again. Because like, you don't really get more value than one anyway. So that's a little bit annoying. But that's why we have all the other consistency Pokemon as well, though, right? So like, to kind of help fix that problem. And definitely a lot of the deck is relying on the Pidgeot, for sure. Like, don't get fooled that it's a 1-1 line. You have a lot of ways to access it, right? You have Heavy Ball if you price the Pidgey, Peonia if you price the Pidgeot even, and you can Palpate the Peonia back in if you miss the first time. So, you know, if you really want to, you could manually get that thing into play. If it gets knocked out, you have Super Odd and Torten, so you can, like, reset it up again, and yeah. Also, the Bibarel Skull Attention is also, like, a good supplement. So, like, you could go 2 to Bibarel or 2 to Pidgeot, but both in play at the same time, that's even better, right? So, that's what we're going for. Like, we're basically going for, like, the Exodia set, the dream setup, right? Where you have access to everything and the consistency engine on board is just amazing, right? Like, it's hard to beat Bibs, Covet, Pidgeot on board, right? That's really strong.
So I will fully admit I've been trying in Charizard to fit both a Pidgeot and a Bibarel line into the deck. And I'm seeing you playing a 101 and a 1-1 line of each of these. And I'm over here with a significantly thicker line, struggling to get them into play at the same time. How are you actually how consistently are you pulling off both of them in play? Or is it like, yeah, it happens sometimes and it's cool?
It's actually what you're trying to go for every game. Like, not even lying here. But they need to be prioritized, though, is the thing. So oftentimes, I might even sacrifice putting down Charmander at all, just so I can put down Pidgeot. And I might sacrifice, you know, the follow-up attack because I'm using Pidgeot to establish my Bibarel line as well. So, like, in some matchups, at least, I'm going, like, really, really slow just to, like, get both of them in play. But Charizard naturally is a really good combat card, right? Like, both of them are. Like, Radiant Sword and Charizard DX are very good combat cards. So your early game attacks of Charizard DX, they're not as relevant as you might think again, right? Like, it's usually better to just have a really good consistency engine on board so that you have access to more plays than forcing some early game attacks that might even play into all your opponent's combat cards as well, right? Like, you rather be the one with access to Conte Catcher and Iona and not having your opponent, you know, on those, especially key into like stuff like Gardevoir as reversal and Conte Catcher. There, I always let them go ahead, even if I had a turn to charge. I was like, no, please attack me. I can't lose my Pidgeot yet. I need this thing in play for a few more turns.
So both of them good. You're mentioning that, like, setup versus comeback and things like that. Did part of that also play into the one of Thornton and the ability to shove a Charmander into play whenever? Or is that not a prioritized strategy of, I'll get the Charmander by just Thorntoning it back out?
Thornton is actually, I think that's the glue that holds everything together. Like Thornton is like immensely powerful in this deck because you're putting down, you know, a lot of one-offs into play, right? Like putting down 4 or 5 options. And then your opponent can choose if they want to target one of them. And it's usually very strong to target one of things your opponent has in play, especially basic evolution Pokemon, right? Like Pidgey and Bidoof and Sobble and whatnot, Charmander. But with Thornton, you can get it straight back into play and evolve it immediately, right? And that's very strong. So as it basically acts as like probably the best bait play possible, because especially in the early game, your opponent usually want to play draw supporter to set up, right? Like the only way they wouldn't play draw supporters to set up and like establish it like a good on board is if they see an opening to boss and knock out, you know, the only you know, attack your opponent has in play, and then delay them at least one turn, maybe even more, right? And then thinking, oh, I can get my turn back because I did this deny play, right? If you then hit them with the Thornton Candy Charizard, like they are like very out fishing and definitely struggling, because now they sacrificed, you know, a lot of their early game speed and consistency and board state and didn't actually mess you up as much as they think they would, right? Same thing as like going after Pidgey as well. I was like rewatching some of the games I had from Utrecht on stream, and there was like a lot of common consensus on going after like Pidgey in the early game. But like when I was playing it, I was thinking, I hope they do, like, because I have Thornton, I'm ready to put on Pidgey anyway. Like that would be good for me. Then their boss is gone, they don't set up the board, like that would be like ideal, right? So it's a funny way to like play and look at the deck for sure.
And then another thing in this deck that I'm curious about is the 101 Inteleon line. How serious is the quick shooting ability? Because we know Charizard was designed to be short of every single number all the way until they have one prize left. So is the quick shooting like, oh, this is a natural thing? Or are you just like, I don't know, man, Inteleon's fun, I'm going to shove it in here.
So if you look at quick shooting, I honestly treat the quick shooting as a like damage modifier tool card. So this is my vitality band. This is my choice belt. This is my defiance band, right? Like any of these, you would probably want to play 1 to 2 of in any normal Charizard deck anyway, right? The perk with playing the Inteleon here is that it has much better synergy with the rest of the deck again. Like you have the Thornton, like they're both searchable, right, with the ball cards. I also like thinking about matchups, right? Like if a deck makes making sense, like Charizard has a really good matchup spread in general. One of the decks it can't beat is Snorlax, right? Like control in general is really rough for Charizard because you usually don't have space for anything to deal with them efficiently, right? But Inteleon adds up as like a really good way to deal with these decks, because now you have a very easy Mimikyu counter, right? Like you're doing 70, it has 70 HP. I mean, that's pretty perfect. You need a tool to even get it out of range, right?
True.
And Charizard EX now suddenly hits every single number it needs to, right? Like you're doing 180 against Snorlax, that's 20 off after they put on Bravery Charm. Now you're doing 200 cleanly, 180 plus 20. Same thing with Rotom, has 190, 10 off, plus 20, KO, right? So the Inteleon is like amazing against any type of control or Snorlax type deck, Pidgey control and Snorlax. So I wanted it in for that. Definitely provided a lot more value than the like tool cards for modifiers here. And of course, you can build up on that further and combine it with Medicham. Like Medicham and quick shooting is some of the best like synergy cards in the game as well, I think, because when you use Yoga Loop and get the extra turn, you want to spend that turn on something, right? Like, because 20 damage isn't a lot. So like you getting the extra turn so that you can use all the once a turn effects again, right? So one of the things you can use again is supporters. And obviously when you have so many different choices, playing two of them is really powerful. But those are all your abilities as well, right? So when you get an extra turn here, you get to use Pidgeot again, Quick Shooting again, and Bibarel again, right? Like that's really powerful. So now you're starting to get a lot of value for like the work you put in to do the extra turns. And then you also get really good reach as well. Because now you can use your Shard Shard as that, as we said, like always misses barely against everything, right? And now you can fix it. And this definitely plays a lot into the price factor as well. Because whenever you play in Shard Shard and they miss, you're like, that's great. They have to spend another attack. They have nothing to ping me, right? They can't like just deal a little bit of damage. They're like all in, right? They didn't have the tool. Cool. I live, right? So when you're playing Shard Shard EX mirrors as well, right? Because this is like another one that you kind of want to have some sort of advantage in if you're not playing like a straight Shard Shard deck. If you're playing the mirrors here, I would argue this deck is pretty favored into mirrors because like you're both just slabbing back and forth, but your opponent will like never be able to like truly do the like beatdown thing in the end, right? Because you will never go far down in prices. You will always be able to like set up a 3 or 4 price turn using quick shooting and yoga loop. So like when they're stuck with two shotting, you always get to be the one that like gets the final one shot at the very end, or even the last two one shots. Like you have you can basically eat up two turns in that matchup, which is really cool. So even if your deck obviously is more, you know, clunky, your deck is way more powerful. So like you can catch up relatively easily with just hitting into Shard Shard. Like if you hit Shard Shard EX inactive for, you know, 300 when they're down to 2 and you are a 3 or 4, they can't do anything, right? Like they can't reach you. So I found that to be very funny as well. So now suddenly I have a deck that's very good into the mirror match and like very good into Snorlax compared to like a normal Shard Shard deck. And now suddenly like it starts to make a little bit more sense to play it at least, right? Like you get the power level that you didn't have before there. Inteleon is very real. Like it's a very good card, like in here. Like it has a lot of synergy. And I think it's better than the belts when you're committing to Medicham as well. Right. So there's obviously more card you need to commit to, but like the whole thing together is better than the belts in this. There's more synergy.
Got it. So I'll try putting a 101 quick shooting line in my Charizard deck for Vancouver also.
No, it's not what I said.
Are you looking for sleeves? Of course you are. You're a Pokemon trading card game player like me. I recently got my hands on the Procyon Gaming dual spec sleeves, and I gotta say, I absolutely love them. I was actually kind of surprised by how much I liked them. So we've now partnered with the Champions Reserve to offer you 15% off of Procyon Gaming's new dual spec sleeves. Maybe you're saying, Mello, why would you want to pick these ones? Because I think, first and foremost, they are indestructible. I had played with the Sentinels, their old formula, and those things just did not ever get nicks on the corners or anything like that. And now I've used the dual specs, and I gotta say, they are also just the most indestructible sleeves that I have seen or used so far. After shuffling up dozens of games hands, they have zero bent corners. They are slightly larger than the Sentinel, so the cards fit in perfectly. And my absolute favorite, they come in boxes of 70, so you don't have a ton of extra sleeves. You have just enough if somehow one of them were to ever break, although boy, you got to be a rough shuffler to do that. So check out the championsreserve.com, use code LAKE 15 for 15% off an order of Procyon Gaming dual spec sleeves. This podcast is sponsored by TC Evolutions. TC Evolutions offers the finest quality crafted damage counters, ability use markers, and V-Star markers out there. So if you're looking to beat your opponents in style, be sure to check out tcevolutions.com and use code LAKE10 for 10% off your order. Anyway, back to the show. There's another thing that stands out to me with this list, and that is two stadiums. Very common Charizard stadiums, the Artisan, the Collapsed. You have Giratina playing Path of the Peak. You have Mew playing Path of the Peak. And Arceus technically exists, I guess, but not so much, right? But these are two very popular decks that are running Path. You're relying on Quick Search and Instant Charge and whatever Lumineon, Luminous Sign, and Squawk and Seize. Yeah, you only have two path bumps. How are you surviving with that? Or are you just kind of like, it'll work out eventually?
It's not technically true, because if you play Worker as well, which acts as the third and fourth and fifth path.
Look, you have too many one-ofs in this list for me to see everything. Okay, true. Three path bumps.
Yeah. But again, like with the path pads, you can cycle the Worker. So in those matchups that are very you know, heavy on to the path as well, you do get to kick it.
Mm-hmm.
There's also like the nature of which decks are actually running these as well, right? So if you're up against Arceus, you have Urshifu to, you know, punch through their deck as well, which is like really good. So then you can get away with, you know, missing more attacks because the path is blocking you longer, right? And same thing against Mew. Mew is basically, are you able to set up two shard charge, right? Over the course of the game before you lose.
Mm-hmm.
If you can, you win. I had a spirit tomb in there as well. Like, but I cut it from Mawile, sadly. But I won a lot of games with Mawile, though. But I did miss the spirit tomb in the end. When I hit Owen in top four, and he knew the entire list, and just starting dodge spamming me, I have no chance. I definitely missed the spirit in there. But yeah, like, if you're up against Mew normally, you have Charizard, right? Like, it's relatively fair. Okay, you have a pet, but I have Charizard against Mew. Like, that's winnable still, mm-hmm. right? Like, that's doable. And Tina was always, like, one of my bigger struggles when I, like, was testing the deck. I was like, ooh, how'd I beat Tina? Tina seems, like, kind of tricky with everything. I did find strategies eventually, and it's similar to the Charizard strategy, so I basically never let them Roxanne. So I always set up so that I can do my four prize turn at the very end. So I get to keep my entire hand throughout the entire game. And then you are definitely able to deal a lot better with, you know, their pads and stuff. Like, if you never lose your hand, that's pretty good. So you get to like chain the worker and so on. You also get to buy yourself some time by swinging with Radiant Sard. This is actually the matchup I added the double turbo for, so I could go a little bit more aggressive with the Radiant Sard throughout the game as well. But yeah, that matchup actually became quite doable as soon as I realized I could do like the quick shooting Medicham strat there too. I wonder, maybe that was like the one I had, you know, this for initially. But then I realized it like worked great in Charizard matchup too. So, but yeah, it was. It's very much like the same strategy, like where you just stay a little bit too high on prices so the opponent can't use the deck to their full potential.
That makes sense. You're able to take over the, like, hey, they don't run Ionos anymore, so I'm able to, like, you just hold the stadium in your hand or whatever if you have it, right? So you always have access to quick search and you're like, all right, I'm guaranteed gonna get this one.
Yeah, you can also do like a very single pricey approach in that matchup as well, where you lean much more on the Bibarel and Scovet engine, and you don't go so hard on pitch it, because like they could snipe it for 280. You definitely always want to play that matchup from behind. You never try to take initiative and the lead there. You're just playing it very slow, benching your Archie Manaphy, and you know, taking your time, setting up quick shooting. You have plays like Yoga Loop into Comfies as well, actually. Like this, like Gratina against anything is like very grindy, right? As we know. So it's doable if you have a good enough start. So definitely, like, if you're playing as a talented player playing Tina, especially if they know your list, I mean, you can't really expect to come out on top, but you know, if they have no idea what's going on, then it's a whole other question.
So I feel like that's really the theme of what we keep coming back to, is this worked the one time for the one tournament, because you have what sounds like a disgusting amount of reps with the deck and no one has any idea what's happening.
I do have way too many reps with the deck, though, I will admit. And that was also why I thought it was a shame to not play it at all, this format, right? So I was like, you know what, let's do it. I need some, you know, mileage for all the testing I put into this deck, even though it wasn't like really on purpose, you know.
Of course. Sometimes you just got to play the game to play the game, and you're like, well, actually, not even broke the format. You broke the one tournament that went incredibly well. So there's more stuff in here that's just like strange. Well, you mentioned the double turbo. Actually, you got that one. So that is a Charizard, in addition to, I assume, at some point you can waterfall for 50 and things like that as well.
Yeah, so I initially had a 2 Rapid Strike energy, no double turbo. So I choose to go for a split there. So they kind of overlap, but just not on the Rapid Urshifu VMAX, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they do overlap on the Inteleon and the Medicham, which are like the big ones. But now the double turbo also gets to overlap on the Pitch Shot as well, right? So like you get an additional attacker there, which is actually pretty cool. Like Creature of the X is not a bad attacker into, you know, multiple things. And it gives you one more way to kick stadiums as well, talking about that, right? Creature of the X attack do kick stadiums, so that's an additional pet kicker. But yeah, that was the main reason for that. Like the Wonder Abyss Dragon actually looks kind of silly, but you're usually never using more than one Urshifu like attack a game anyway, right? Like you using it as a surprise rapid flow finisher, or if you're up against Arceus, you're just going to go Geltrust, and then you can go rapid flow follow up after that, right? If you still live, or you can just Turo it and give up on it as well. That's also fine.
Turns out Turo is a pretty good card.
It's a pretty good card for sure.
So you mentioned the Mawile as well. This is another one that, like, I guess I want a little more of a concrete, like, how many games are you just winning with Mawile? Like, how often is it just, oh, my opponent treated me like a Charizard deck, I have Tempting Trap for game. Like, is this a common win condition? You're like, yeah, it was cool and it did the job.
I think I won, I'm pretty sure I only used it 3 games, but those 3 games felt really good. So I used it, I used it 1 round 2. I was playing against a Bennett EX deck, which was, you know, very interesting. Mm-hmm. And I was terrified because I don't have any stage runs in my deck. So I was like, okay, if that thing attacks, what do I do, right?
I mean, you start tail smashing with B-Barrel right there.
So that looked a little bit scary. Then I actually saw an opening. So I went like in with the super fast Mawile and Tempting Trap to buy myself a turn at one point in the game with my boss. And then I got to put down all my candies at the same time. So I got, you know, going to pitch a sword and quick shooting in the same turn. And now suddenly it was looking great. Like all I needed was really buy myself that one turn and then I could get there. So it didn't win me that game. It won me game 2, round 3 on stream when I kept missing everything and like fell really far behind against Gardevoir and just had to go for the I hope we don't play Turo on your decklist play. And they didn't, so that was great. And then I had one game in day 2 where I play against a Charizard and I'm actually just trying to buy some time here. So I'm doing the Mawile pretty early right away just to see, okay, do you have any answer, right? Like maybe you have like one switch and if you spend your one switch, I might just do it again, right? And see if you concede or not. But it turns out that they had like nothing. They had no switch at all. So, I think I was relatively certain after using Tempting Trap like 10 turns and they had pitch shot in play and they didn't play down switch yet. So I was like, okay, I mean, you probably don't have anything. So I established quick shooting so that I didn't actually have to deck them out, right? Because I might not even have the time because they could quick search every turn. That ate a lot of time. They kind of knew that they had like no win con, so they were just like quick searching every turn. I was like, okay. Mm-hmm. So I was like, just immediately draw quick shooting Tempting Trap for 44 turns in a row, and then finally I got them. So I had to snipe like a Pitch of the X twice because they collapsed it. And then I had to snipe a Charizard EX on the bench manually for 17 turns. And then the turn I knocked out the Charizard EX on the bench, I also got to knock out the Rotom in the active that I was Tempting Trapping with my own Charizard. And then I got to grab all my prizes. So that was really fun. But that was like all the games I think I won with the Mawile. But I think people are definitely like scared of it, so they might be played a little bit different. But it's a pretty like risky strategy to go for. So like I'm kind of fortunate when I don't have to like try to use it, because if you can just win the prize trade normally, then that's usually better, right? Like it's safer and not rely on your opponent just randomly not playing switching options, right? Or like what if my Charizard opponent suddenly puts down switch and lost it and then I lose, right? Like if I went too all in on this as my only plan, right? And it's better for me to just, you know, win the prize trade instead.
That makes a lot of sense. The Mawile is always just one when you see it and you're like, all right, is this actually just control because you have the Pidgeot and the Mawile and are you just gonna win off of that, or are we actually winning by, as you mentioned, winning the prize trade?
Felt like more of a last resort type of thing, but a very good last resort for sure. And Like you could also just try to do the early game, and like if they have an answer, then sure, okay, maybe like even scoop and go next, right? Like if you went too all in on it, or it can be okay, it works, okay, great, just sit there then.
Did you know that you had a card from every single set in this list going into the tournament, or not till after Twitter got a hold of it?
Honestly, I wish I did that on purpose. But that is really cool, though. I do love that fact. That is the coolest fun fact I did accidentally, I think.
It has to be one of the few times in history where someone has gotten such a high finish with a deck that has a card from every set at the end of rotation, right? Like beginning of rotation, sometimes that's like, what, 7 or 8 sets? That's not the most impressive, but we're talking about... How many are you talking about right now, actually? Do you even know? I have no idea. Are we at 12? 13?
Sets total? Actually, I didn't count, but that sounds about right, I guess.
Okay, so quite a few. Matchups. I very quickly want to go over a couple of the matchups, because I assume by now, anyone who's heard you talking about this deck is like, I'm never going to play this thing. I'm probably never going to play against it. But I do want to hear just a couple like details that maybe we haven't gotten to yet. And one of them is Gardevoir. Like you've mentioned, you know, the tempting trap on a Greninja, for example. But otherwise, this seems like it would have a harder time into Gardevoir than regular Charizard, which is already a very close at best matchup for Charizard. So what are you doing into Gardy with this thing?
I would argue
that
you might have a better matchup into Gardevoir than normal. I could be coping a little bit though, but like here's all the tricks you have.
Yeah, right? Wait. So, the question is, do you have a better matchup, or does the deck have a better matchup?
Oh, damn, that's a good question. Okay, let me talk about the tricks you have, and then you can judge yourself.
Okay.
So, like Gardevoir doesn't do much unless you start taking prizes against it. Like, but it's oftentimes okay with playing the slower game because it's basically nothing in a game that has a better setup on board than Gardevoir again, right? Like you can't, like no decks really can make a board set better than Gardevoir, so like then the Gardevoir is always okay with taking it slow. But this deck arguably has an even better setup than Gardevoir can make again. When you have set up Charizard EX, Pidgeot EX, Quick Shooting Inteleon, Beepearl, Scoville, like the whole squad, right? Then you actually have a lot of things against them. So the problem for Gardevoir is that if Gardevoir wants to knock out the Charizard EX, you need 6 energy from discard pile plus the reversal for knockout again, leaving you with 20 HP. If you look at this list, that's bad. That's really bad. Then you get Yoga Looped, you get Quick Shooting. Even if you prepare a turn in advance, you can get Quick Shooting plus Yoga Looped. So like the range is actually 40, like relatively easily. So to knock out the Charizard, you know, safely, you actually need to have... like 2 psychic energy on you already before you put 4 from discard pile plus the reversal. And with the way we play this, like we're never even giving them access to reversal. So they kind of have to do like the 9 energy on the Gardevoir, which makes it even more challenging to like actually reach this number here. So this deck just tries to be like very annoying that way. Like we're always trying to be behind and then, you know, set up for, you know, like the big prize swing turn. So like we circumventing the reversal and the counter catcher really well with this deck, which normal Charizard just can't afford to, right? Because like you don't have these type of tricks there, so you kind of just lose, right? If you're going too slow, so you always have to play into the counter catcher and the reversal, which is really bad because they kind of dismantle your setup right away. You take 2 knockouts, they go cool, counter catcher, reversal, by pitch it, you know, and like oh cool. And it's kind of over from there already, but
I've been there.
Like even if they don't do that, they're just not got the active, you're kind of losing anyway, like price trade wise. So, but with this, we're taking it really slow. Like the Gardevoir player has a way bigger challenge, right? The Avery is also like very big into the Gardevoir matchup too, because now you can attack them, like through that as well, right? So now they have to play around Yoga Loop, have to play around Avery, and they can't use their deck to their full potential either, as like you're purposely behind all the time because you don't care about being behind since you have so much power level you can like throw at them, right? Eventually.
That makes sense.
That's my plea for the matchup here. And so I don't think it's too bad. Again, granted that you play well, draw well, and all that.
I mean, that's got to be the biggest issue, right? Like, those all check out perfectly, right? Like, oh, you meta-cham them, but you also have to set up your Sobble. You also have to set up the Pidgeot B-Barrel. And it's like, well, you have to sequence all of this and put the right things down at the right time and all that stuff. And I'm sure you can do it. Good job.
Thank you. I mean, it's difficult, of course, for sure. Like, you need to know what to prioritize. It's like, again, you would have to prioritize getting Pidgey and Bidoof down as soon as possible. And like, not be too aggressive with the Charmander again. Like, you can put on Charmander maybe, but like, it would be more for like a bait, right? Like, hope they kill it and like, leave your other stuff alone type of thing, which, you know, a normal opponent would do. I would do it too, right? Like, yeah. I would definitely knock out the Charmander, like, not having any info. So that would make sense. But yeah, if you look at like all the cards you have disposable to actually set up your consistency Pokemon, though, it's actually not that bad. Like, it's very similar to, you know, what other decks have, even a little bit extra.
I mean, it is, until I would like to point out the 2 Iona, 1 Arvin, 1 Worker, 1 Avery as your draw supporters.
Mm-hmm. Don't forget the Peonia and the Raihan. Especially for these type of decks, right? The Ryan is essentially working as an Arvin for almost all purposes, like giving you that access to the candy, because something is always getting knocked out in early game here, right? So the Ryan still functions as like a second Arvin, and the Worker, Avery, and also Peonia is drawing three, basically. So you have three supporters that draw three cards, but in different ways, right? With different side effects. So if you add all of these together, right, you have 2 plus 3 plus 2 and 2 and 3. You have like 7 total. So it's a very normal amount of consistency supporters compared to another Charizard list.
True. Although I will point out 2 of them are Hop, but we can ignore that three part.
Three of them.
Oh, that's true, because Peonia would also like be Hop.
Because you have to put 3 cards back again.
You're not selling me on that consistency right now.
No, but like, that's the supporter lineup. This deck's consistency is not in the supporter lineup. It's in the Pokemon.
Okay.
That's where the consistency lies. Not only do we play Rotom and Mew and Luminion like a normal Charizard, we play Skullcandy on top of that. Mm-hmm. And now this is like the, you know, hard enabler for, you know, almost any start to function, right? Like, if your hand is not good, if you have a Ultra Ball or VIP Pass, you have access to Skoka Bill if you're brand new hand, right? Like, normal Charizard list, they don't have that option at all, right? Mm-hmm. They have VIP Pass bad hand, they can go into Mew at best, right? And like, hope to get an Ultra Ball for the fish. Like, that's not strong. That's really slow. That's not great. Mm-hmm. Here, easy. Pick up Skoka Bill. If your hand is too valuable, you can even pick up Squawbit. So you can Squawbit away your hand and then Skoka Bill after.
No, now we're talking that the VIP for Skoka Bill Squawbit.
Yes, that's a really powerful combo.
That's so funny. Actually, that properly sounds good, but it's so funny because I never would have thought that. Good.
I had this type of engine made for Volts, actually. And I was like really excited about it, to play for Volts. And then I ended up playing Gardevoir instead and couldn't really put these two in the Gardevoir. It didn't make any sense. But I was pretty excited for this combination for Volts originally.
Another one is the Mew matchup I want to mention. So you already mentioned your matchup against Owen, which was Fusion Strike Mew, which is definitely a deck that exists, but we tend to see more DTE Mew. You mentioned, all right, yeah, I need a Charizard, and if I have a Charizard, I'm winning the game. But like, is it really just coming down to I have to bench a Charmander and pray it doesn't get bossed? Are you trying to get down Charmander before Pidgeot in that matchup? Like, does that change your priorities of like, give me the Charizard and I win? Or is there more nuance to the Mew matchup?
So like, another issue that arose when I played against Owen as well was that it was Fusion Mew with like double velocity as well. So
that sounds terrible.
That's really, like very anti-synergetic with this deck when you're trying to like, okay, if they knock me out, I can Torten, right? You can't Torten if the guy is in the loss. So that kind of also ruined like the whole premise of this deck here. So obviously that was pretty bad. That was definitely a matchup I would need Spiritomb to have like any reasonable chance in, on top of like playing Charizard as well. But in that the Charizard line is so thin, then yeah, like, you would need Need Spiritomb for sure. But yeah, I don't think I regret playing the Moala with Spiritomb. It definitely helped me get where I got initially. So, yeah, should I have expected to find Mew at an European, you know, major for sure.
You are part of the problem. Are you aware of that?
I mean, I guess I was playing Charizard though. At least that's something. You know,
you managed to take Charizard and make the Mew matchup worse, though.
I mean, that's true. I made it. I think it's okay to say like a double turbo Mew. Like it didn't have Lost City. Lost City was like the real problem. But mm-hmm. This deck is also, you know, I know, a Giga Surprise is really weak against Dirge. your most explosive consistency is from the first turn. Like it is from, you know, Skokabilly, Rotom, Mew, right? Mm-hmm. Like you can use all these and, you know, wow, you have like a 10 card hand ready to pop off next turn. If you get judged there, that's really bad. And it's really hard for you to like reestablish that type of hand again as well. Mm-hmm. Like Rotom helps for sure. But like if you say you did all of that and the Mew and then they judge you and kill the Mew, then it can be difficult, especially if they pat you on top of it, right? So that was my two losses in day one, actually. I got judged, patted by Arceus and had some problems with my prices regarding Urshifu. So that was too much to handle on top of it. So,
but Peonia is in the deck.
It is. It was just a little bit slow. It was still really close games though. Like, and one of them I was definitely favored to win, but got a little bit unfortunate at the end of it, I think.
Man, these new players are always talking about getting unlucky in a loss. Hate to see it.
I got so unlucky, man. I priced my prizes and dang, I couldn't do it.
So I have to forget to put out your prizes and they're never there. You're good.
That's true. We have Peony for a reason, right? And Heavy Ball. Like we're trying to fix it. But it was like all the games I played was really fun though. That was like the big thing. Like I had so much fun like playing every single round. Win or loss, it was very entertaining for sure.
Is this a due to the comeback nature of the deck? Is this a like best of one? You're winning a 35-minute game doing quick shooting shenanigans with Yoga Loop. Is this a I 2-0'd all my opponents? Like what actually, or how is this deck winning a game when it actually wins? Because my mind says this deck takes for freaking ever to actually win a game.
It is a very slow deck, but it does depend on the matchup. Like if you're playing against Moon or Miraidon, for example, that's like very fast paced. That's like four turn games, right?
Yeah.
Still. So
would you get the Yoga Loop some frenzied gouging moons?
I got kind of close, but no, sadly not. That's like you would think it might go that direction, right? But you need to do really well. Like what usually just happens is that you go with the Radiant Sard spam instead. Mm-hmm. That's a very consistent strategy to do as well, actually. Like, you give them a couple of prizes, and then you go, okay, Radiant Shard, Raihan, double turbo, kaboom, right? And now the opponent is in a pickle, because they kind of need to knock that thing out, but then they lose the price trade again. So that was like the main plan, and it worked pretty well as well. I beat all the moons I played against except one where I got the tie. So that was pretty okay. I'm not sure when I hit those. Maybe only two, but it felt okay.
I mean, yeah, Moon versus Charizard has always been with Radiant Charizard in the deck, has always been a pretty solid.
Yeah, for sure. Radiant Charizard is very good in that matchup. It also depends on like their variant as well. Like there was a trend towards playing less tools at the moment as well, which I also took advantage of. Like when people like just wanted to go faster, right? Like play more items, shoes, speed, right? Skimping on the tools, and that definitely does help quite a lot as well. Because then, you know, Raiden Sard takes the clean knockouts, right? And yeah, you can get closer to the quick shooting Yoga Loop shenanigans as well, I guess.
So, as a deck builder and a deck builder who had success, what advice would you have to anyone who's out there? They see this deck, they're like, wow, this guy, granted, multi-IC champion, but this guy got top cut at a very large tournament with his pet deck that everyone would have said is a complete pile of worthlessness. Even if you had posted it on Twitter in advance, everyone would have said, this is a meme. you're just playing Guardi again. So what would you say to those deck builders who have some sort of inspiration from the success that you have seen with what can only be described as a deck of cards?
So, I mean, like, don't let anyone tell you that your idea is silly or that your list is silly or like that the concept won't work, right? Like, you can only truly know that yourself. Like, it's very hard to judge a deck in a list by just looking at it, right? Mm-hmm. Of course, like, with a lot of experience, then you can, kind of gauge a lot of, you know, concepts and lists and see if, you know, they make sense or not, right? But not always. Sometimes things might be a little bit more hidden, a little bit more complicated, right? Like, if you look at this list, especially, I think there is a lot of nuances that are lost as well. Like the Skorkabilly Scovet play, for example, right? Easy to miss at like a really good consistency setup in the beginning. Scovet synergizing with Biberal is a given, right? But also Scovet synergizing with Mowile, enabling you to never deck out. So that becomes a win condition for you. Normally you play Pitchit, right? Like the Pitchit V. But here you use the Scovet instead as your anti-deck out. That's also like kind of easy to miss at first. Mm-hmm. Thinking that you have to set up a quick shooting Inteleon to win. But you can simply deck them out too. Because you never deck out, right? Because mm-hmm. you have the Scovet. That is cool. Like the quick shooting synergy with the Medicham and the Sharshar, like acting as a tool card there. And also the recyclable even. So and the double turbo Radiant Sarge. There's like a lot going on here for sure, I think. And it's very hard to like grasp the whole deck by just looking at it.
It's also very hard to look at the whole deck. I keep having to scroll down quite a bit on the page to see the 60 cards. So last question, UIC is coming up. Are we expecting to see something like this from you again? Or are we going to be back to, I'm going to take the Lugia list and I'm going to make it absolutely perfect? Or are you still in between where you're going to actually be in the future? Like, is this the new Tord Reklev deck list?
So, I mean, even though this is very fun, though, it's definitely playing the game on hard mode. And, you know, I find it fun as well, right? Like, it's a good challenge, but if I'm really trying to win, it will probably be more 4-0, sadly. But like a lot of options is nice for sure. I usually like to take, you know, any deck to the extreme in some form or shape. Mm-hmm. Like do extreme consistency or, you know, extreme power level decks like this, right? Like, it's fun to just trying to max out a deck's capabilities in one way or the other and, like, use that for all it's worth. So I'm going to try to do that again here, and then we'll see. It's still, like, almost a month away, so I haven't locked in a deck yet. We'll admit I'm still, trying to get a proper overview. I feel like I have a really good overview already, but I want a little bit more time before I kind of lock in something that I'm going to try to own and craft for the rest of the time.
Tord, thank you so much for joining us. Do you have any shout-outs, any sponsors you'd like to thank, and where can the people find you if they would like more shenanigans from you?
Yes, of course. Shout out to my sponsor, Vecto TCG. Always a blast working with them. Shout out to all my friends, my family, girlfriend, everyone supporting me, messaging me, and everyone that thought this deck was really cool. Shout out to you. And everyone listening as well. Me yamming about the deck for an hour. That's also much appreciated for sure.
Wait, very quickly, last question. Have you watched any content creators try and play this deck? Or are you just like, I refuse to watch them struggle through this?
I've not tried watching anyone, actually, but I probably should. It sounds very entertaining, so I'm gonna get to it.
Myself, Twitch, Twitter, and YouTube, at @Mel_Magikarp, at Lake of Rage Pod to follow the podcast. This has been another episode of the Lake of Rage Podcast. We'll catch you all next week. Did you know the Lake of Rage podcast now has merch at doomed-gaming.com, which is down below in the description? We have a shirt and sticker available to you. Use code LAKE for 10% off your first order of some Lake of Rage podcast merch. And if this sells well, we're going to add some more designs in the future. Now, on to the show.